scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila in the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, happy Tuesday, happy game day. It is Tuesday, April 2nd. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
Oh, doing just fine. Dandy day here at the Dome. It's the Flames, Anaheim Ducks, and that's what we are getting set for on this Tuesday night. And it's Jacob Markstrom who gets the start in net. Jacob Markstrom starts for a second consecutive game, and I'm very curious as to what our text line thinks about that, because I saw what my Twitter mentions thought of Jacob Markstrom getting the start. They did an optional skate. Dustin Wolf was in the visitor's net and took all the late shots after practice. Shooter Tutor was in the home net, which is your cue that Jacob Markstrom is indeed starting. He picked up the win on Saturday in that 4-2, impressive 4-2 victory over the LA Kings. So what do we think? Curious on the text line at 960-960 if you're listening live, how you feel about Jacob getting a second consecutive start. From what we heard from head coach Ryan Huska after practice on Monday, we'll play this again. Felt like he was kind of leaning this way. He was definitely hinting in this direction. This was Ryan Huska after practice on Monday.
Ryan, you've alternated Jacob and Dustin the last number of games. Is that something you should be expecting going forward?
No. They're both going to play a lot of games. Well, so whether it's back-to-backs or it's 1-1-1, that's still up for debate, but it won't necessarily be the alternating all the way through.
Of course, the reaction online is about as you'd expect. A lot of people wondering why they wouldn't go to Wolf in this game, why they would go to Jacob for a second consecutive game, so on and so forth. But I still, first of all, before getting all bent out of shape potentially about this decision, let's see how the final nine games play out in terms of the goaltender distribution. But I also think you need to remember, and this is the important part for me, I think you need to remember that Jacob also needs to play here. This is the guy that has been your MVP all season. This is a guy who is as competitive as all get out, and he wants to play. If you ask Jacob, he'd like to play all nine, and he understands the situation. He understands they've got Dustin Wolf. He understands that they're not going to the playoffs, all that type of stuff, but you still need to respect him. You still need to give him his playing time. You still need to balance this out with a guy who's been very important to your team this season. And the final part of that is there's no guarantee that he is not back next season. I know there's a lot of talk that he's going to be dealt this offseason, and I think both you and I understand that is a definite possibility, but not a 100% guarantee that he's going to be moved. You have to take all these things into account when making decisions down the stretch here.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up, because you need to, at the very least, you need to guard against every potential outcome. And I know that there's a lot of Flames fans out there who think that Jacob Markstrom is going to hop on a plane back home to Sweden at the end of this season, and we're never going to see him at the Saddledome again other than in an opposing uniform.
Yeah.
And that's a possibility for sure. If you asked me to place a bet today, I don't think I'm wagering that Jacob Markstrom is a Calgary Flame at the start of next season. But you have to consider that possibility for a couple of reasons. A, here's what we know. There's been a lot of bluster about what went south in the New Jersey Devils and Calgary Flames trade conversations about Jacob Markstrom. And the best that I've been able to sort of put together is a big issue was that the Devils never came up with a package that the Flames thought was sufficient for a goaltender of Markstrom's caliber. And while he didn't mention the Calgary Flames by name, Tom Fitzgerald said on deadline day that essentially the goalie they were after, the asking price was too high. And so
didn't he use the term like extortion
or
something like that?
Yeah.
Craig Conroy, the potential extortionist.
The extortionist.
The unnamed extortionist, maybe.
And so that leads me to believe that the Calgary Flames are still going to command a big haul for a guy who has 2 years left on his contract.
As they should.
As they should, who's a proven number one goalie in this league. And you have to be willing to back yourself up that, hey, we could bring Jacob Markstrom back. If we don't get the asking price, we could go forward with him as our number one goalie. And the way that you kind of shoot yourselves in the foot in terms of what you can ask is by making it clear you're done with them. They absolutely can't do that. And so, yes, you're trying to develop Dustin Wolf, who is your goaltender of the future. You're trying to get him an adequate amount of exposure to the NHL level. But there's a real case to be made for being very careful about this relationship with Jacob Markstrom.
Yep.
And, you know, you mentioned, buddy, the reaction online today. I got to tell you, I think everyone should have seen this coming. And when I say seen it coming, based on what we saw on Saturday night, based on what we saw from Ryan Huska, I didn't need to check your Twitter to figure out who the starting goalie was going to be today.
You had a pretty good idea on Monday, hey?
It seemed crystal clear to me that it was going to be Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, I feel like I've been rambling on for long enough. I'll let you say your two cents, but I'll just echo what you said. Like, let's base the goaltending workload on what we see over the final nine.
Yeah.
You and I, with 14 left, said we'd like to see 7 of each. I'd still like to see the Calgary Flames get to that number, but whether it's tonight for Dustin Wolf or it's Thursday in Winnipeg, quite frankly, I don't think it much matters.
Yeah, and the important thing here is that they're definitely going to give Dustin lots of starts down the stretch. And there's 9 games to go. And so after tonight, there's 8 games to go. And if it ends up being that they do go 7-7 or it ends up being 8-6 and one way or the other, yeah, I'd like to see him get to 15 starts, him being Dustin. I'd like Wolf to get that type of workload. But if it ends up being 14, I don't think we're talking about a complete travesty, miscarriage of justice, or anything like that. And I feel like it really needs to be underscored that there is no guarantee that Jacob Markstrom is traded. And he is still a part of your team under contract for the next 2 years. And while remember this past offseason, the one that we just lived through, we all thought that Noah Hanifin and Tyler Toffoli and Nikita Zadorov and Elias Lindholm and Chris Tanev, we all thought they might get dealt before the season started. And the only one who did get moved before the start of the season was Toffoli. Everybody else was back and played more than half a season as members of the Calgary Flames outside of Zadorov. And so I think that it's very fair to expect the Flames to take phone calls on Jacob Markstrom, and I think it's very fair to expect them to have a conversation about how he sees his long-term future here, all those types of things. But he still is a goaltender that they should be putting a high price on. There's no guarantee that teams will meet that high price. They don't have any type of real deadline to move him. He's under contract for 2 more years, so why hurt the relationship? Why alienate one of the most important guys in that room?
And one of the most respected.
And one of the most respected guys in that room, one of the full-on leaders in that room. Why go down that road if you don't have to? They fully understand they need to give Dustin Wolf some important playing time and meaningful playing time down the stretch. They also fully understand that Jacob Markstrom is a number one goalie. Their MVP wants to play and needs to be shown his respect as well. And I think that is the balancing act the team is trying to walk right now.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, and our regular listeners and diehard Flames fans are certainly aware of this already, but Jacob Markstrom also has a full no-move clause.
Yep.
And so Jacob Markstrom very much holds the cards going into this offseason. If he, let's say he gives you a list of one team he's willing to go to and you can't strike a trade with them, well, you got to bring him back. And I don't think that's even the worst way forward for this team. I really don't. And again, I don't think we're talking about Jacob Markstrom as the Calgary Flames starting goalie in October, but you can't make that clear to the rest of the league by mishandling his situation. You can't have Jacob Markstrom storm out of here on April 19th and say, I will never play for that team again. There's some real important management of that relationship that's happening. And that's why, yeah, I'd love to see Dustin Wolf. Anyone who listens knows that I think Dustin Wolf should have been in the NHL this entire season. But I understand why Jacob Markstrom's between the pipes tonight. If it was Dustin Wolf on Saturday against Los Angeles, and he was a big reason that his team won a hard-fought game against a playoff team, I'd say, what do you mean it's not Dustin Wolf tonight? So shouldn't Jacob Markstrom be afforded that same sort of respect? Didn't he earn the start tonight? I think he absolutely did.
Yep.
He didn't get shelled. If they lost 7-2 to the Los Angeles Kings on Saturday night, we're having another conversation. But at 3-2 early in the third period, if he doesn't make that glove save on Andrei Kopitar, you're talking about a really good effort that might go to waste.
Yep.
And so give Jacob Markstrom credit for what he meant on Saturday and give him the start that he's earned. I really don't think this one's rocket science.
And you know what? You got a really good Winnipeg team that is probably going to be a pretty desperate Jets team on Thursday. On the road, seems like a good time to go to Dustin Wolf, get him in I do think they have somewhat of a plan here, even though on the outside, you and I and you listening, we're not privy to what that plan is, but I do think they have some sort of a plan factored into how they want to do this and how they want to go about their business.
Yeah.
And I guess I think it's incumbent upon us to let that plan play out before we start completely tearing apart how the Flames go about their business managing these goaltenders down the stretch.
Yeah, and I would like to see, and I know this isn't totally what goes into it, but here's what I'd like to see for Dustin Wolf. I'd like to see him get one of the next two games, because I think facing one of Winnipeg or Edmonton could be really valuable for him. You know, we're talking about a guy who delivered a great performance against the Vegas Golden Knights in his next round. He doesn't seem like, well, I don't think it's helpful to be sheltering him from specific opponents, and so I'd like to see him get one of those two sort of Western Conference heavyweights, and then I hope he gets a start in San Jose, not only because it's his hometown and he grew up around there, he's got a ton of family and friends, but because a big part of the Dustin Wolf story this season is getting shelled by the Sharks in that start, and I'd like to see him get another crack at that team.
Yep.
And so now maybe we're having another conversation if Jacob Markstrom makes 40 saves tonight and pitches a shutout, I don't know that you can take him out in Winnipeg, but I do hope Dustin Wolf gets two of those upcoming three.
Yeah. Look, if we're talking here on April 19th and it turns out that of the final nine games, Jacob starts eight of them, well, then, yeah, I'll be a little more critical. Because that I think, would be mismanagement, and I do think that would be, not taking advantage of an opportunity that's staring you in the face. But I don't think that's the way it's going to go. I really don't.
Well, and I think a big part of this is sort of the information that we're not privy to, and that is, what is Jacob Markstrom's current feel? What is Jacob Markstrom saying behind the scenes? How much of that frustration that we assume has lingered ever since his comment about not liking the way his trade situation was handled, like, has that dissipated? Have some of the behind the scenes conversations given him a different feel? Is he fuming mad? You know, is it known behind the scenes not to get too close to Jacob Markstrom? We don't know that part. And I'm not surprised that that's something that has probably had a pretty tight lid on it. No one's too sure how Jacob Markstrom's feeling. Certainly in the media, all you're going to hear from Jacob Markstrom is, I'm focused on the next game. And when we talk about managing that relationship, when we talk about doing your best to make it smooth enough that if Jacob Markstrom is in your crease next October, it's not an issue moving forward. A lot of how many starts that might take, what sort of conversations that might take, a lot of that is the stuff that we're not privy to, right? How is that relationship behind the scenes? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, and I don't either, and we may never know. That may not be something that becomes part of the public conversation. I don't know. I do know it's the first time since the beginning of the month that Jacob has started consecutive games. He started those two games in Tampa Bay and then Florida. Then he got hurt and hasn't started consecutive games since. So we'll start consecutive games against LA and then Anaheim on this Tuesday night. A few texts at 960-960. Lucas and Chestermere says, I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. Quality starting goaltending might be the hardest thing for a team to find outside of an elite scoring number one center. Why sour the relationship at the end of a disappointing season and make the retool rebuild more difficult moving forward? Kevin from Carstairs says, I've supported the Flames as long as I can remember, and understanding the decisions of the management and ownership has been quite perplexing. It's crucial to handle Jacob Markstrom's contract situation with care and professionalism, considering his desires and intentions. The same approach should be taken with Dustin Wolf. The organization seems to lack a clear mission and vision, which is confusing for the fans. Well, I guess they're not going to come straight out and tell you their goaltending plan between now and the end of the regular season. I think we've got a pretty decent idea of what Craig Conroy is trying to accomplish here, specifically with the deals that he's made over the last number of months. And so what they're doing with Jacob and Dustin and how they're balancing, I think that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to, which I think is the right call, they're trying to be they're trying to make sure that Dustin gets what he needs and Jacob gets what he needs. And I do think that is the proper balancing act to strike here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I do sort of wonder what we're expecting to get from the team in terms of what their vision might be. I think Craig Conroy has been quite upfront about the fact that, you know, this is a youth movement or a retool, whatever you want to call it. But he's also been upfront about the fact that he doesn't believe in tanking, that he's not going to sit a bunch of veterans or trade everybody to try to win the race at the bottom. And so, you know, when you look around the league, I do think that vision is as clear as you get in a lot of markets, or as clear as we've had here in Calgary for a while.
Yeah.
Personally, that's just me.
Agreed, 100%. Other than when it was pretty clear that, you know, like in the late winter, early spring of 2022, I think we had a pretty good idea of what Brad Treliving's vision was.
The win now,
bulk
yeah.
up to win a Stanley Cup yeah. that postseason,
yeah, no,
right?
That's perfectly fair.
This reads, so do you believe that respect and management of Markstrom apply to the other Flame skaters? It's also a balancing act to play the kids. Yeah, I think that absolutely plays into it. And that's why when you have situations like Andrew Mangiapane, who's slightly banged up, could easily be playing through whatever he's got going on right now, they're just not going to push it. Why would they? And so I do think that there's a balancing act in terms of getting young players in the NHL lineup with the veterans. Again, you're not just going to sit Nazem Kadri and Michael Backlund for the rest of the year because they're over 30 and you're not making the playoffs, right?
Right. Well, and this is the hard part with goaltending, right? Because there's one net. Like, you can balance the respect for the veterans and playing the kids a lot easier at every other position, right? Having Nazem Kadri in the lineup doesn't mean that Matt Coronato can't be in the lineup. Having Kevin Rooney in the lineup doesn't mean that Martin Pospisil, like, you can balance these things. You could still have Mackenzie Weegar and Rasmus Anderson in the lineup and call up Jeremy Poirier to get a look at him. Like, you can balance it a lot easier when you're not talking about one guy at a position. But I also think it's sort of important, and I'm not sure that precedent is the right word with such a short-term thing, but okay, so a big part of the reason that Jacob Markstrom is still in the crease tonight is what he did on Saturday, right? Well, when you put Dustin Wolf in, that also makes it easier to understand, if you're Jacob Markstrom, why Dustin Wolf might have a chance to stay in for two or three in a row if his performance is up to it, right? So Jacob Markstrom plays his butt off on Saturday and then you sit him tonight, well, you're basically saying, hey, you know, this isn't necessarily about the last game. This is just about us wanting to see this kid. Well, then what happens if Dustin Wolf has a poor game? Jacob Markstrom expects he's going to be right back in there. Or even if Dustin Wolf has a good game, Jacob Markstrom kind of thinks, well, it's my turn because clearly this isn't a what have you done for me lately game we're playing. And so I don't know if I'm making any sense when I say that, but now you kind of set the stage to leave Dustin Wolf in for a few if his performance validates it.
Agreed. No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. This says from Heath, the Flames' poor handling of Wolf this season is mind-boggling. I understand your points about starting Markstrom if it was game 40 and if they were in the mix. The lack of faith they're showing Wolf is going to spur the relationship and in my mind could slow his development, especially with this team. Starting Markstrom because he deserves it or out of respect makes no sense. You get game 73 of 82 when there's no chance for the playoffs. Get the kid in the darn net and give him as many games as possible. Again, I'd be a little bit more on board with that line of thinking if we were talking about a guy starting nine games of the final nine, right? And I just don't think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I understand the point Heath's making. I just think this one needs to be judged by the end of season sort of breakdown. And again, we talked about it at 14. So we'd like to see 7-7. Has it been 3-2 since then?
Yes.
So this will put it to 4-2, I believe, for Markstrom.
Markstrom, Wolf. Yeah.
4-2. And so, you know, if that means moving forward that you can somehow get Dustin Wolf five of the remaining eight, that's perfectly fine by me.
Yep. This says, I think they may have already alienated Markstrom already, haven't they? They say you. I don't think that Wes and Pat have alienated Jacob Markstrom. I mean, we may have, but that's less important to what the Flames are trying to accomplish.
And I think it's it's fair to wonder. We watched yesterday at Winsport, Jacob Markstrom give up a goal on a 2-on-0.
Smash his stick in three.
And smash his stick. Yeah, in a million pieces over the crossbar. And you can take those little moments as a snapshot and wonder how a guy's feeling and is the frustration there or what's the frustration as a result of. Maybe Jacob Markstrom is feeling alienated. And quite frankly, after his name was in the trade rumors for 5 or 6 weeks, he'd be justified in feeling that way. It's really hard for the rest of us to guess how he's feeling because we just don't know.
Yep. This reads at 960. The problem I have with Markstrom starting is you know what he is. You're trying to see what you have in Wolf. He needs the time. Markstrom needs the rest. This says everyone...
Hang on. What's Markstrom need the rest for?
I don't...
Yeah. Okay.
Do you think he's going to the World Championship?
I'm going to go with no.
Everyone crying about Wolf not playing and Markstrom being traded are the same people that will be crying next year when the Flames are sitting in the basement. Wolf has done nothing yet. And this finally reads, 100% guarantee you have to respect the fans as well, both ways. And that's, I think, fair. And that I think that you need to... I think some fans come to games to see Jacob Markstrom. I do, and I think some fans really want to see Dustin Wolf.
Okay.
And I don't think that's universal.
And I wasn't sure how to read that text. That means the fans want to see more Wolf, and so...
Maybe?
Yeah, okay. I'm not too sure on that one.
I'm not exactly sure, but I do think it's important to listen to what your fans, especially the fans who are going to be in the building, would like to see. I do think that's an important consideration.
This is the problem again with just having one net. It's not like there's people in this building who don't want to see Dustin Wolf. It's just that this really is a balancing act. And that's why when we keep talking about a 50-50 split in starts down the stretch, that truly is a balancing act. Like,
yep.
you have to keep both sides happy. I think, you know, if we've seen one thing out of this current regime, it's that they're not afraid to give the kids opportunities. It's not like they want Dustin Wolf to sit because they don't want him to play. It's just you know, this truly is a bit of a tightrope walk.
Yep. Okay. Text line, great stuff. 960-960. Tuesday night, Flames will start Jacob Markstrom against the Anaheim Ducks. They're into Winnipeg on Thursday to take on the Winnipeg Jets. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you, and we're here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Of course, everything being produced back at our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio by Cam and Shan. Cracked foundation, Boeing foundation walls. They have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time now for a Tuesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday. Gents, want to talk a little bit about a guy who's playing some good hockey over the last couple of games. Andre Kuzmenko scored two goals in St. Louis on Thursday of last week. Follow that up with a couple primary assists in the win over LA on Saturday. So 4 points in the last two games for Andre Kuzmenko. So, gents, what's your gut say about Kuzmenko? Is this him turning a corner, or is this Kuzmenko continuing to show some of that frustrating inconsistency?
Well, I would say it's the start of him potentially turning the corner, but way too soon to say that he has completely turned the corner and is on the straightaway towards becoming a consistent NHL player. But, you know, for me, what's really jumped out the last couple of games is just how dynamic he has the ability to be. And you know, Pat, listening to every single Flames Talk post-game show, I hear you say it all the time. You know, this guy has, you know, top 5% skill in the NHL. But it's a matter of putting it all together, playing consistently, and he's got to be better away from the puck and defensively. And I think that even as a 28-year-old, that's something that he can continue to work on. And Flames can be maybe a little bit more patient than his last team, the Canucks, who are hoping to win a Stanley Cup this season. But, you know, he is a very dynamic player in the offensive zone. He's got a great shot. He's got great edges. He's strong below the circles. It's kind of once you get out of the offensive zone where there can be some issues, but you got to start somewhere. And I thought he played his best game as a member of the Flames, despite the fact that they lost to the Blues. I thought he was fantastic in that 5-3 loss on Thursday, and that I thought he was really good, especially early in that 4-2 victory over the Kings on Saturday. So hopefully the start of something as far as bigger and better goes for Andre Kuzmenko, because the skill is certainly there.
Yeah, I think it would be fair at this point to, you know, sort of lump this in with some of the previous inconsistencies. And yet I think what I see is a potential solution, and that's that Nazem Kadri has really started to unlock something in Andre Kuzmenko. I think Andre Kuzmenko, one of his inconsistencies from my vantage point is his engagement. It just, there's games where it doesn't feel like he is as engaged as the Flames expect him or need him to be. And if we know one thing about Nazem Kadri, it's that he absolutely insists on his line mates being engaged all the time.
Yep.
You sit down in the Flames locker room next to Connor Zary, you sit down next to Martin Pospisil, and you ask them a little bit about what they hear from Nazem Kadri, the sort of lessons or wisdom he's imparting, a lot of it is that he expects you to be all in all the time. And we saw another great example from Kadri of that on Saturday. And I think that's been sort of a revelation for me as it relates to Andre Kuzmenko is, okay, you know, I've really wondered where this guy could fit in long term. I'll be honest, I have trouble, and when I say long-term, I even mean next season, I have trouble kind of figuring out, you know, geez, are you going to give a top nine roster spot to this guy, a forward spot? What does that look like? Well, if Nazem Kadri can keep him as engaged as he's looked of late, especially on Kadri's wing, that's going to make a huge difference. Suddenly, that's a guy that I'm quite comfortable having slotted into a second or whatever you want to call it, even first line spot next year, because he's really brought that out of him. But now we need to see proof that he can maintain that.
So, yeah, that and kind of my answer, guys, is the one, like, for me, it is more of the frustrating inconsistency with Kuzmenko for now, but I guess it doesn't have to be, right? Like, it's going to be hard for me to take two games and the four really good periods, and that's not a knock on Kuzmenko in the back two periods of Saturday's game. It's just that game kind of got drowned into the mud from there on out, and If that's two games, that's great, and it's certainly very promising to see what we've seen from him in these two games, but that also goes into the up and down nature and the sometimes invisible, sometimes he's popping type of path that we've all watched here with Kuzmenko since he got here. So I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be his frustrating inconsistency rearing his ugly head again, if he goes out and makes sure that, you know, it's not just two games. But I guess I'm not ready to buy in that it's all of a sudden him turning the corner until I see, like, six or seven or eight games where he looks like this. But, guys, I do, to Wes's point, I do think that there's a opportunity anyway that playing with Kadri and a speedy guy like Pospisil, who can open things up the way that he has all season long, I do think there's a chance that could be a real nice fit for Kuzmenko for the rest of this season or even heading into next year as well.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that Andre Kuzmenko can prove to me or to you or to anybody else that he's suddenly become a consistent hockey player in the last 11 games of the season. He's got a head start. He's two games in, and he's played really well in the last couple of games. But even if he plays really well for all or most of the final nine games of the season, I'm not sure that that's going to convince everybody that he's suddenly going to be a Blake Coleman type who might have a handful of games a season where he's off. But generally speaking, you know exactly what you're going to get. But you know, for me, Andre Kuzmenko is a guy who has to play in your top nine. He is not a player whose skill set translates well to being a fourth line player, even though you could still use him on your power play. So the Flames have him, and he's under contract for another year, and they'll try to squeeze everything they can out of him. And they might do that for one of two reasons. Number one, to keep him, to move forward with him. Or number two, to potentially, if he has a strong season next year, flip him before the deadline and acquire some more assets. So him playing well is great for him. It's great for the Flames. And you know, the one thing that I really appreciate about Andre Kuzmenko, his personality is fantastic, but he loves the game of hockey. That's pretty clear. Even when the team was practicing at Winsport yesterday, he was out there, I bet you, 30 or 40 minutes after a number of players had left the ice, just working on his skills. So it's always good to see that from a guy.
And I will reiterate the one thing you said right at the top, Willsy. Like, I love watching this guy. You know, Tuesday night, Wes and I are going to be down here in the hot stove for warm-up, which is too bad because one of my favorite things to do is watch Kuzmenko in warm-up, because the things that he does with a puck on his stick are stupid. He does this thing where he sets up a bunch of pucks in front of him and then just stick handles another puck through the pucks. You're like, this guy is out of his mind how skilled he is. And and so I'm really hopeful that this is him turning the corner, because I really want this guy to pop, because I think he's a really exciting player when he does. But so far in Vancouver this year and in Calgary, it's been such a wild ride of the highs and lows, and it's taken such a step back from his 39-goal season from year one in the NHL. But I guess what I'd say is I'm not giving up on it popping. I really want to see it, because it could be a lot of fun if it does start popping on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key, having some consistency. And I got to tell you, one of my favorite plays of the Flames season was the first goal that he scored against the Blues on Thursday. Was it Justin Falk who he pickpocketed behind the net?
Yep.
And then from in tight with next to no room, just snapped the puck right into the roof of the net. Just a beautiful goal from the steal to the shot. And it just gives you a glimpse of what this guy can do. And now you want to see that on a more regular basis.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Gents, the Flames about to host the Anaheim Ducks. Second game they'll play against Anaheim this year. One more game on the road against the Ducks this season in a couple of weeks' time. I guess in just over a week's time. Guys, Anaheim is going to miss the playoffs for a sixth consecutive season here. They've had lots of high picks. They've had lots of guys that have come into the lineup, and you know, they've been potentially the next ones, from Drysdale, who's no longer here, to Zegras, who's just getting back after missing 31 games. Leo Carlson, there's a lot of excitement around him, and Mason McTavish, so on and so forth. But it's going to be a sixth consecutive year for Anaheim out of the playoffs. And so as the Flames are going through their retool and are going to make it a second consecutive year out of the playoffs, is Anaheim a cautionary tale for the Flames or any other team? Like, is this a Ducks team that you're like, well, because, Willsie, one of the things you're always saying is a high pick doesn't solve everything, right? And I just wonder if Anaheim is one of those cautionary tales that suggests that, yeah, you can get a lot of high picks, but doesn't mean that your rebuild is getting fast-tracked, or doesn't mean that there's a guarantee you're back in the playoffs and contending at a high level anytime soon. I'm curious where we fall on this Ducks team relative to that conversation.
Yeah, draft picks are lottery tickets. Now, the higher the pick, the better chances are you're going to hit, but there's no guarantee unless it's a generational guy like Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews. Teams very rarely miss on players who have that much hype. But if I'm not mistaken, and I'm out at the vet right now. I had to take Zoe to the vet, so I don't have my sheet in front of me. But I was looking earlier today, and I believe the Ducks have had 9 first-round picks since 2018. And they've had some high picks. You know, Trevor Zegras, I believe, was the 9th overall pick. And we just talked about Andrei Kuzmenko being inconsistent. Well, everything I've heard about Zegras this season, outside of him having a hard time staying healthy, is that he's been incredibly inconsistent. But you can see the skill is certainly there with him as well. You've had a couple of the top 3 picks in Mason McTavish and Leo Carlson. And McTavish is a good player. Carlson, he's missed a good chunk of the season because of injury, but he looks like he's going to be a really good player. Are those guys going to be the generational players the Ducks are hoping that they would be when they pick them in the top 3? Maybe, but probably not. Doesn't mean they're not going to be stars in this league for the next decade or maybe two. But it's interesting because I've had so many people say to me, Flames have to tank, they have to get a top 5 pick. Well, the Ducks are one of many examples around the NHL, teams that have had numerous top 5 or top 10 picks who haven't been able to figure it all out, because you have to do 2 things, at least in my opinion. Number 1, you've got to hit on those picks. And number 2, you've got to surround those players with good players. You can't expect a first overall pick, let alone a 10th or 15th overall pick, to go out there and put the team on his back. There aren't very many of those guys. And even generational guys like Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, and I would say the latest one, Connor Bedard, they've put their teams on their back to a certain extent, certainly in the case of McDavid and Matthews, but what have those teams won? And maybe one of them will win this year, who knows? But to this point, they haven't won anything. So it's a tricky one because, again, the higher the pick you get, the better chances are you're going to hit on it. But there's no guarantee that, getting a bunch of top 5 or top 10 picks is going to turn you into a Stanley Cup contender. You've got to do it the right way. I believe you have to have the right culture in place, because if you don't, it takes a long time to create one. And you've got to develop these guys the right way. So surrounding them with good players and not losing way more than you win, I think those things are really important. So I do think the Ducks are a cautionary tale, but I'll finish my thought by saying this. I think it's too early to say that these draft picks won't get that franchise turned around sooner or later. They've got a lot of good young players in that team, and 2-3 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the playoffs and maybe competing to win a round or 2 or 3.
Yeah, I struggled with this one, guys, because I definitely think when you talk about the number of consecutive seasons they've missed the playoffs, that, yeah, they are a cautionary tale. And then I started asking myself, okay, well, you know, what is the tale? Like, what's the cautionary tale here? And the best I can really come up with is the Anaheim Ducks are kind of showing just how difficult this is.
Yeah.
Like, I looked through their draft history and, you know, it's not peppered with misses. That they've taken some guys toward the top of the first round that have fairly intriguing potential. Obviously, you know, we're very early in the career for Mason McTavish and especially for Leo Carlson. You know, they found a really exciting prospect in Owen Zellweger in the second round. They found a really strong goaltending prospect in Lucas Dostal, I believe, in the third round. So you can't look and say, well, they've blown their drafting. And then you kind of look and say, well, what's going wrong? The biggest thing I can kind of pin it to is, and maybe this is too easy to say from afar, but I have trouble as I analyze some of the moves they've made, figuring out exactly what the direction is. Going back, and this was a prior regime, but even going back to the, I suppose, mismanagement of Shea Theodore in the lead up to the expansion draft. And, you know, this was a team that was stacked with D prospects, and then it was a team that didn't have a lot of D prospects. And then, you know, they're trading a D prospect or a young defenseman in Jamie Drysdale for Cutter Gauthier. Like, I sort of wonder where this whole thing is headed. And yet the biggest cautionary tale for me is that it's really, really hard to tear it down to the studs and build it back up. And they're just still at the start of that process.
Yeah, I think the thing that maybe what I meant by cautionary tale is exactly what Wes just said, Wilsey, and that is how difficult this is to build from the ground up and why, you know, sometimes there's a lot of pushback. I don't know what the right plan is or the right way of doing things is to build a Stanley Cup winner, because of the most recent Stanley Cup winners, there's lots of different ways teams have gone about it. But I think that what the Ducks have shown us is that go down to the, you know, right where you're awful and you're bad for a long time. Not saying it's not going to be successful, but it doesn't happen quickly. As we just said, this will be 6 years out of the playoffs, and I think Leo Carlson's a great pick. I really do, and I'm really excited about what he can do. He's had a decent rookie season. They've done the load management with him. I'm curious how that pays off for him long term. The D-man they took 10 overall last year in Mintikov is a really interesting player. We know that McTavish has had himself a nice career. Cutter Gauthier is a prospect. Looks like he could be a real high-end player. I still don't know what the long-term future is with Zegras and the Ducks, but it's just one of those things where you're like, man, this. If you go about it that way and you don't get Connor Bedard or Connor McDavid, it can take a while. And it doesn't mean that it won't get there, but I don't think it's a guarantee they're going to get there either. So I guess that would be the cautionary tale, or for all those people who are saying the Flames just need to tear it down and be bad for X amount of years. Well, maybe Anaheim is a cautionary example of how it doesn't necessarily just work in 4 or 5 years. It might take even longer than that.
Yeah, and even if you do get Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews or Connor Bedard, there's no guarantee that that's going to turn you into a contender. It's taken a while for McDavid. It's taken a while for Matthews. And yeah, those teams have had some playoff success, but not as much as they were hoping to have when they won those draft lotteries and got generational players. So for me, if I were Craig Conroy, and God knows I'm not qualified to be the Flames general manager, but I've been around the game for a long time, I think he's in a position to kind of go about it using a hybrid model. It's really difficult to get foundational pieces through trades and especially in free agency. I think more often than not, you got to draft and develop those guys. So the Flames have 24 draft picks in the next 3 years. So you're going to have to draft some of those foundational pieces that you can build around. But I also think that you can use some of the picks that you've acquired and the moves made since the start of the offseason to bring in some younger NHLers, guys like Yegor Sharangovich in their early to mid-20s who are ready to play in this league and who you don't have to wait on and who you can use to surround the players that you're taking with the five first-round picks you've got in the next 3 years. So I do think there are different ways to go about your business. Some teams have tried to tear it down to the studs, the Sabres, the Ducks, the Coyotes, time after time after time. It hasn't worked. I think the Sabres are another, to use your words, Pat, cautionary tale. They've had a second overall pick in Jack Eichel and two first overall picks in Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power. Three really good players. And they're going to miss the playoffs for what, the 13th or 14th straight season? It's not easy.
Nope, it's not. And I don't know what the right or wrong way to do it is. I brought that up. I just was like, geez, it's going to be 6 years. I'm just so conditioned to the Ducks being a powerhouse. And it's been 6 years since they got swept by San Jose in their last playoff appearance.
You can still hear the "you can't win here" chants echoing from Honda Center.
I will never forget the "you can't win here" chants in that sweep.
The one thing I'll say, guys, just to wrap up my thoughts, is the good news for the Flames is they've got these 24 picks in the next 3 years. They've got some exciting prospects. But they also have some good pieces already in place. So I talked earlier about surrounding your young players with good players. Flames already have a bunch of those guys. So if they continue down the road that they're going down, then I don't think they're going to go 6 years straight not making the playoffs. I can't envision that unless they completely swing and miss on these draft picks that they've acquired. So I don't think that they're is going to be quite as much pain in Calgary as there has been in places like Anaheim and Arizona and Buffalo.
Yeah, and I'm not even trying to compare the two teams necessarily, just like really interesting to see. Well, there's a lot of different teams that have to go in different directions, go about that direction very differently. Just curious as to what our thoughts were on this Ducks team the Flames will face on Tuesday night. We'll see you down here shortly, Willsie. Thank you, pal.
Okay, see you soon.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers, and the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.